What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very gifted and talented jazz saxophonist. And for the past 10 years, he has demonstrated what it means to be creative, melodic, and has released countless of hit songs over the years. Please put your hands together and welcome jazz saxophonist Steve Cole. How's it going, Steve?
Fantastic, man. Thank you.
Oh, man. Pleasure you having on my show, man. Thank you so much for, you know, taking your time out and chopping it up with me, man. And, you know, it's just a real honor to have you here.
Oh, man. No, I'm flattered that you wanted to talk to me. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, I've listened to your music, man, from, I would say, around 2000. And, you know, two of my favorite tracks, I don't want to get too lengthy, man, but, you know, Every Day, the track you did Every Day off the New York LA album back in 2003.
Right.
And From the Start on the Between Us album, those are my two favorite tracks you've done, man. Those are just hot, they're melodic, and they stay in my head all day.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's a good thing, man. It's a good thing. You know, I'm a keyboardist, man, you know, so, you know, from one musician to another, man, I definitely got to take my hat off to you, so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, those two songs are a couple of my favorites. I think they were on the same record, actually. One of them, From the Start, I wrote with David Mann, and David produced it, and that was a lot of fun. He's a super talented saxophone player from New York who is also a great producer. And then Every Day I wrote with Brian Culbertson, and we produced that together. So that was a really fun record. I got to work with some really, really, really cool people on that one.
Man, you've toured with a lot of and recorded with a lot of heavy hitters in the jazz community, man, like Jeff Lorber, Boss Skaggs, Kim Waters. You know, working with these legends over the years, Steve, how has that changed your sound in a live setting and in a studio environment?
You know, I think that, you know, everyone you work with, you take a little something from, especially when you're, you know, blessed to work with, you know, great musicians and great songwriters. Working with Boz was really interesting because, you know, I got the gig as a saxophone player and ended up playing a lot of keyboards on the record, on the tour. And, you know, so that was a really musically challenging, you know, time in my life because I was, you know, on the road with someone who was an absolute kind of, you know, pop and rock legend playing an instrument that wasn't my, you know, primary instrument. But I learned so much working with the musicians in the band and working with Boz and learned so much about musicianship and about just feeling and dynamics. And you know, Jeff Lorber, I was a fan when I was in high school, and to be able to, you know, record with him and play shows with him, you know, again, one of the most challenging things I've ever done, because, A, you know, the pressure of kind of, you know, working with someone that you've been a fan of is kind of high pressure because you want to, you know, you want them to like you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're sitting there in awe of their ability. But, you know, everyone has something to offer, and the greatest musicians are so generous with their time and with their talent. You know, and then, you know, being in the sax pack with people like Kim Waters and Jeff Koshaw, I learned something new every day, you know, just listening and standing next to them on stage and hearing, you know, their interpretation of things and their approach to things and having, you know, long conversations about music and working with them in the studio and writing songs with them. You know, it's just, you know, you gotta think of everyone that you work with as, you know, there's mentoring that can go on at every stage. And I like to think that when I work with people who are so accomplished that, you know, the thing that really keeps me on top of my game is the challenge of working with these people and the challenge to step my own game up another couple of notches. And I always kind of come away with something, you know, inspiring, you know, from my association with these great musicians. So I really love it. And yeah, it does change your sound. It changes your attitude. It changes your approach. You know, different worlds open up when you collaborate with people who have great ideas. So it's just a joy.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It was like, you know, for me, I've been playing keyboards for about 20 years, and you know, we can get away with, you know, just mere talent and ability, but, you know, I always find that when I collaborate with different musicians, I always take on a new set of ears, you know, that grow onto me, how I hear music and how it's delivered. So, yeah, I totally agree with you there.
Absolutely.
You know, give me a little history, Steve, of how when you started as a musician and, you know, merging into a heavy hitter that I consider, you know, in the jazz community.
Well, you know, it was funny because my relationship with music is kind of, you know, was kind of on again, off again when I was younger. My father was a saxophone player, and you know, wanted to be just like dad, but you know, it's hard to be taught by a family member sometimes.
Yeah.
And you know, although my dad inspired me, you know, and gave me the joy and the love of music, you know, the discipline of music was something that I had to find later. And you know, I was in band when I was in school, and I, you know, I got frustrated because I wanted to play the melody all the time, and I didn't want to play parts. So you know, I got kind of, you know, I spent most of band practice standing in the hall for disciplinary reasons. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, you don't have the melody. It's like, but I want to play the melody. Well, you're not playing the melody. Play the part. I want to play the part. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
In high school, I just, you know, I got lucky. I got really lucky. I ran into or was introduced to a saxophone player teacher named Wayne Richards, who, you know, probably no one's ever heard of, but he was just such an inspiring guy and very, very well educated. He studied in France, and he studied with Fred Hemke, and he was a very, you know, mostly steeped in the kind of, you know, contemporary classical tradition for saxophone. And I just thought he was the coolest guy in the world, and I loved his sound, and I loved what he could do, and I started to fall in love with the classical literature that was written for saxophone. And he really inspired me to kind of put in the hard work, because he gave me something to strive for. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of musicians that you talk to, I think, have similar stories. There's that spark that, you know, there was an educator, or there was a mentor, or there was, you know, someone in their lives that gave them that a reason to really devote their selves to a life in music. And from then on, you know, I became very dedicated and really got into the fundamentals and understood why it was important to play scales and etudes, and started to fall in love with all this, you know, this literature written for saxophone and orchestra. And then I went to college to study that. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I really, you know, when I was, you know, freshman in college, I, you know, performed with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra as soloist. I was a prize winner in the concerto competition. I realized that there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities for, you know, classical saxophone soloist and orchestra. And I kind of had a little bit of a crisis, because I was like, what am I going to do with my life, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I had a detour from music and, you know, went into the business world for a while. But I found my way back to it and, you know, started really following more of what was natural to me, which was kind of jazz and blues and R&B and soul music. And once I kind of got myself back on track with music and said, you know what, I want a life in music. This is what I really want. I've tried some other things, and it's not really what I want. You know, I just made a point to, you know, again, kind of seek out great players and try to learn from them. And was lucky enough to run into some really great musicians who, you know, played a really large part in my development as a musician. The first person I ran into kind of just playing around Chicago was a guy named Richard Patterson, who was bass player with Miles Davis, and he plays with David Sanborn. And, you know, he kind of, you know, asked me to be in his band, and he introduced me to a whole other level of musicianship. And from that kind of growth, you know, I was able to kind of network my way into some, you know, people who were recording and started touring with them. Bob Mamet was the first, and then Brian Culbertson. And then started writing and then producing and then started making relationships with people at record labels. So it was really just an evolution of just, you know, really being single-minded about wanting a life in music and seeking out those people, you know, who could help me and who I could learn from, and making, you know, a very, very strong commitment to, you know, always, you know, taking the criticism that I got, trying to grow from it, trying to associate with people who were doing great things and try to learn as much as I could from them. So that was really my, you know, my plan all along. And, you know, I think with, if you have that kind of, you know, dedication and single-mindedness, I think you're going to find your way, you know, and I think I did.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. You know, even over the years that I've been recording and composing and playing, I still consider myself a student of music. And, you know, there's just so much to learn out there. I feel I'm always going to remain a student of music, you know, an upperclassman, of course, but, you know, still in that learning stage and, you know, just continuing to develop my craft as a keyboardist.
Absolutely. And that's the great thing about the arts is that there's really no such thing as I've learned everything there is to know. You know, it's lifelong learning, and you're never as good as you want to be, and that's the great thing. You're always challenged, you know?
Yeah.
You're never as good as you want to be, and there's always someone who's doing something that you want to be doing.
Oh, totally, totally, man.
You know? So, there's always inspiration out there.
You know, see, I'm a huge fan of other musicians, as you are. You know, playing covers is, you know, one of my things I do on the side, you know, just because I'm inspired by other musicians' compositions. What other musical influence, you know, have you really focused on that really cultivate your sound as a saxophonist?
Well, you know, I did a lot of transcribing when I was younger, and still do some today, to really, you know, get inside people, you know, different players' thoughts and melodic ideas and harmonic structure. And so, you know, I used to transcribe a ton of Cannonball Adderley. There's a saxophone player named Billy Pierce, who I absolutely just love. And, you know, being from Chicago, you know, Johnny Griffin was one of those guys that I absolutely, you know, just, you know, probably wore, you know, grooves all the way through. I think if you looked at my Johnny Griffin records from when I was a kid, you could probably see through them at this point. So I kind of picked and choose. I mean, I listened to, you know, everything you're kind of supposed to listen to. And one of the things that I always tried to do was, if I liked a player, I would try to figure out who they liked and go several steps down to try to really figure out, like, you know, where this builds from. But I really kind of picked and chose in terms of, you know, the people I wanted to get really, you know, deep into. And, you know, after kind of that tradition, then it was, you know, of course, you know, Michael Brecker blew my mind. John Coltrane absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, it was kind of all over the map, because I would check something out and I would hear it and be like, wow, that is deep, man. I need to know more about it. And I would just kind of, you know, it was like search and destroy a little bit.
Sure.
But you know, Johnny Griffin, Cannonball, you know, Eddie Harris, Stanley Turrentine, you know, and then of course, you know, Grover and David Sanborn, you know,
yeah.
Junior Walker,
yeah. Oh,
you know, it's just all over the map, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, but I even do it today. Like, I geek out on James Taylor, and, you know, then, you know, kind of generation after that, I kind of geek out on some of the things that John Mayer's doing or Jason Mraz is doing, or, you know,
sure,
different pop groups that are, you know, writing really well-crafted songs, you know, and try to learn them, and, you know, on piano or guitar, and really, you know, try to understand what's going on and where their heads are at with, you know, with song structure. And, you know, I don't know, just kind of, you know, I guess my methodology isn't terribly calculated, but, you know, there is a methodology.
There is, you know, you know, that's how music works a lot of times, man. You know, we have structure when the song is complete. I tell people a lot of times, like, man, you know, starting off, putting my ideas together is really all over the place, because you're pulling from, you know, different times or different inspirations, man. But, you know, but once it's a full puzzle, yeah, we can kind of structure things out, you know. But, you know, pre-post, man, it's all over the place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, with all the albums that you've done over the years, Steve, you know, composing your material, do you work with a team of writers and producers to start the material, or do you usually create the basic foundation of, you know, your melodies and song and bring it to the producers and writers to finish it up?
You know, I think every possible combination of methodology for writing that you could think of, I've done, you know. I've done a lot of writing where, you know, one or two people are sitting in the room and there is absolute silence, and then at the end of the day there's music. where none of us had brought anything that was, you know, pre-composed or preconceived, I've done a fair amount of kind of, you know, writing on my own and having just different ideas and bringing them into a collaboration. I've written a bunch of stuff just all by myself. I honestly, you know, I sometimes really, when I think about it, I think I probably prefer to walk into a room without any preparation and just see what happens. Because a lot of times if one person brings in something they've been working on, there's almost a strange feeling of commitment to that song. And it may not be any good, or it may not be the right direction, or you may not be getting a whole lot of inspiration about where to go with it. Yet you spend a ton of time because you're like, wait a minute, no, we got to turn this into something.
Sure.
And you probably, you know, I think there may be a lot of songwriting collaborations that don't work out because people get so kind of buried in what people brought to the table as opposed to kind of just sitting together and trying to figure out what the two of you sound like as songwriters, as opposed to one person kind of taking the, you know, taking someone else's music somewhere else. But that said, and, you know, there's, you know, 7 billion contradictions in music, I've had great success coming in with a song, you know, that was kind of, you know, a piece of a song and turning it into a finished great song, you know?
Right.
So, you know as well as I, it could, you know, depending on which way the wind blows and what you had for dinner last night and, you know,
right.
Well, you know, and whether you had a fight with your mother-in-law, I mean, it's gonna affect, you know, whatever you do is, you know, that's creative. So, but I think that probably most of the songs that I've written that I like the best have been complete collaborations in the truest sense.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. You know, I talk a lot about building that relationship between artists and producers and along with other musicians as well in the studio. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, if you're a session player, you're just pretty much laying your parts in the track and you're moving on to the next session. But it's nothing like having a team of close friends that you've collaborated over many projects. And you guys kind of get a feel of where they're going to go automatically. And, you know, just having
right. That
unison between, you know, the collaborators is, you know, it's timeless and it's really effective in the studio.
Yeah, and there are people that I work with regularly. I mean, I used to write a lot of music with Brian Culbertson, and he and I seem to fire on the same kind of set of cylinders all the time. David Hildebrand is a really talented, you know, musician in Chicago that I wrote a lot of music with on my Spin record. David Mann and I always seem to have a really great kind of, you know, output with regard to songwriting. And we have great results, you know, with me and Kim and Jeff, you know, with writing the Sax Pack stuff. And that really is a true collaboration. I mean, the three of us sit in a room and we just end up writing songs, you know. And,
sure.
So, yeah, you know, I've had some, you know, I've had a lot of fun writing with people I didn't know, that you don't have any history with. But there's, you know, there's a bit of a risk involved in that. You know, you come to the table and you really want to, you know, show them that you can write, and they want to show you that they can write. And sometimes you end up hitting it off and clicking and doing something cool, and sometimes you end up sitting around and just twiddling your thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. It's like any relationship. You come into a blind date and you never know how it's going to end up.
Oh, totally. That's the risk.
You know, that's what I feel like. That's what I think about, like, songwriting. Like, hey, you should write with so-and-so. I don't know so-and-so. Oh, but I think you guys should write together. Okay, it's like a blind date.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, totally. No, totally, man. But, you know, performing on stage or recording in the studio, Steve, I got to ask you, man, I think everybody has a place where they're really centered and they have that zone where they're really focused. Do you find that being on stage or in the studio environment?
On stage, period.
Right.
And I enjoy the recording process, but it's somewhat, you know, methodical. Although on my new record, I played a lot of the music live because it's with orchestra and rhythm section, and I played most of the melodies on that record live in studio with orchestra. Yeah, I think that honestly, in the future, I'm going to try and create the live environment in the studio as opposed to kind of having that antiseptic studio process and then playing live. I like performing with you know, warm bodies in the band and with warm bodies in the audience.
Sure.
To me, music and performance is why I'm in this game. You know,
right.
I enjoy. You know, I could play the same song 700 times in front of 700 audiences, and it's never going to feel like it's the same thing. And so, I just, you know, for me, live performance. Let me put it this way: if someone said you could work every day for the rest of your life on the road, but you can't make another record, but you could perform, or you could, you know, make a ton of records but never perform live, I would be like, well, I guess I'm not making records anymore.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, as musicians, man, we are performers. You know, a lot of people, you know, just get the visual of, you know, singers and, you know, songwriters performing. But, you know, musicians who are soloists, pianists, saxophonists, you know, we're all soloists, man. So, you know, just having that ability and the leisure to perform is, you know, it's you know, unforgettable. And I totally agree with you. I will pick the road for the rest of my career.
Yeah, it's rough and wacky as it is, you know, if it means I get to play in front of people, I'm cool with that. I mean, there are people who just want to live in the studio, and that is just cool. That is cool for them. That's not me.
Sure. You know, with the CDs that you've put out, the band members that are on the CDs, do you take those band members on the road with you, or you just hire different session musicians for a studio and a set of musicians for the road?
You know what? Most of the time, the guys who are recording with me are the guys that I'm performing with. I mean, with the exception of, you know, sometimes if I'm recording in a, you know, because my band is pretty much from Chicago. If I'm recording somewhere else, we may use, you know, musicians that are local. Like, you record in L.A., use a bunch of L.A. players, you know. But a lot of them, you know, I perform live with, too. When I was in New York, I used a bunch of New York guys. It's kind of like whatever the right tool for the job is when recording. More and more, you know, certainly from my first record to my current record, I'm using more of the guys that, or more of the musicians that I've become accustomed to performing live with, because you have that bond, you have that kind of, you know, they understand where the music should go, and we have that relationship. And as a matter of fact, on this new record, you know, a bunch of the players are guys that I've been playing live with for years. With the exception of Steve Rodby and Russell Ferrante, who I've never played live with, but have recorded with, and at least Steve Rodby I've recorded with a lot.
Sure. Now, that makes a difference. You know, I like to ask that because I think every seasoned artist has, you know, a particular direction and a sound that they're, you know, been giving and explaining to the public for years. And, you know, just having those seasoned musicians on the tour with you helps a lot. You know, it really captivates the CD, what we're listening to. So, yeah, great job, man.
It really does. But the fact of the matter is this. And that, you know, this is just a truth, you know, good or bad. There are some musicians who are equally as adept at performing in front of thousands of people and performing in a studio. You know, they have that energy in live performance, but they also have the precision that the studio requires.
Sure.
But not every single musician has both of those things together. I mean, there are musicians who simply are great on the road, but a disaster in the studio.
Sure.
Or not a disaster, but you know what I'm saying.
No, it is. It's different environment. You know, I find that a lot of session players that play live overplay things in the studio, and sometimes the studio musicians don't play enough on stage. You know, just grooving and improvising with the band.
and you know, and there's this stigma that people say, well, you know, if you can't, you know, be in the studio, then you're not a true musician. Well, you know what? I got news for you. Each of those things is a very, very specialized talent.
Yes.
To be able to entertain an audience and play live and you know, and go over in front of a lot of in front of people and excite them with your playing, that is no less, you know, a gift and talent than being able to play perfectly in time and, you know, and read a chart, you know, perfectly and you know, cleanly. And you know what I'm saying?
A lot of
people think, you know, if you can't do one, then you're, you know, that's not true. It's, you know, specialization makes the world go round.
And, it does.
You know, it's good that there are some people who are great at performing live and some people who are great in the studio. It's also great that there are people who do both equally well, but not everybody does.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. You know, I know a lot of players myself, you know, they're not really great creators just creating their own music, but they're excellent playing other people's music. If you give them a guide, let them know where you're at, I mean, they'll just go to town, you know, but I personally wouldn't have them in the studio creating music for artists, per se. No, so I totally agree with you there.
Right.
So, Steve, what is on the musical agenda for 2010, man? What do we have on plate?
Well, 2010, we're going to release this new record that I made, and I'm just, it's a dream come true because, you know, I started out on a concert stage with the orchestra. I always wanted to get back to the concert stage with the orchestra and was able to kind of take everything that I've learned over the last, you know, couple of decades and, you know, craft a great selection of songs. Some standards, some very, very, you know, well-crafted pop songs. I found a wonderful arranger named Michael Cunningham who just, you know, he just created the most beautiful compositional arrangements that I could ever imagine. And I got to, you know, play with a rhythm section that is, you know, some of my guys that I've been playing with for a long time, like Mike Logan and Dale Prasco and David Hildebrand, but also Russell Ferrante and Steve Rodby, and about 30 string players and flutes and clarinets and oboes and French horns and the whole thing. So it's just a gorgeous record, and so that's going to be released. It looks like either late fall or early kind of into, you know, next year.
Sure.
But so that's what's going on, and you know, I'm also making a new record with the Sax Pack, so, and you know, we're going to be working in the studio on that, and we've been touring. You know, we've been pretty busy this summer, so kind of touring, recording, releasing records, you know.
Yeah, all
pretty
the fun
much
stuff
the deal.
all the good
fun stuff.
Stuff,
you know.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, Trying to figure out a minute to, you know, sit down and take a breath.
Well, keep it wheels motion, man. Keep it moving.
Yeah, man, thanks.
Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man, again. I'm truly honored, and I would love to have you back on the Producer's Corner, man. Talk about your new musical endeavors, man. We could chop it up again.
Absolutely, anytime. This has been a blast, man.
Well, I appreciate it, man. You have a good, safe 2010.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot.
Take it easy.
Bye.
And a big shout out to Steve Coe for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another honor talking to another legend, man. He's been out a while, and he's a very talented jazz saxophonist. And for more information on Steve Coe, you can hit his website up at www.stevecoemusic.com. Again, that's www.stevecoemusic.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well at www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And again, that's www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And I also host a podcast on iTunes, so if you have a computer or an iPhone, you can pull up the iTunes store and type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spud2tight@gmail.com. Again, at spud2tight@gmail.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.